welcome back to HE Podcast, a series where we explore and understand how research works in the environment and ecology and how its implementation can pull us out of climate doom. The HE Podcast is your one-stop shop of curated content on conservation, sustainability, and the environment. This is your host, Namrata Murli. In this episode, we're going to explore a cryptic and important but lesser known taxa, the land snail. We have Dr. Arvind Mathiasta today, and he's one of India's best malacologists, and we're going to explore all things mollusks today. So welcome, Dr. Mathiasta, and let's get started.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. So mollusks have been around for over 500 million years, yet we know very little about them, especially in India. So Arvind, could you tell us what got you interested in mollusks and why has it been a major focus area of your research?
Yeah, mollusks are one of the very old taxonomic group. Indian mollusks, they say, dates back to around 450 million years old. So still, despite its very old lineage, very few research has been carried out in the recent time. The oldest literature available starting from 1830 by William Benson, and the latest taxonomic work, what I'm talking about in depth, happened around 100 years back. So why I got interested in mollusks, because my father is also a malacologist and a zoologist. He used to go to field. So I used to accompany him on a regular, interval, and help him in collection, curation, and identification. So soon after my master's, when I joined ATRI, I wanted to do PhD on something other than the charismatic group like birds or butterflies. Though I started off my career in birds and butterflies, I want to do something other than these charismatic group of taxa. So anyway, I have some experience in mollusk, land and freshwater mollusks of the Western Ghats. So I decided, okay, why not this group? Anyway, not many people are working. Nothing much is known about its ecology, systematics, biogeography, or the conservation issues what they are facing. So that's how I got interested, did my PhD, and never look back after that.
So in India, malacology or the study of mollusks was pioneered in the early 1800s. But to this day, it's one of the lesser studied areas. So what are the factors that are in play to create this taxonomic bias?
Yeah, why there is a bias, let us understand that. Birds, butterflies, mammals, there are no good field guides, and nobody thought of making it popular. There are a lot of bird watchers who popularize this, a lot of butterfly watchers or people who study mammals. They popularized these taxa, coming out with a popular guide which can be understood by layperson. So on the other hand, land snails or the freshwater mollusk, barring one freshwater mollusk book published by Zoological Survey of India in 1989, and subsequently it has been revised in 2009 or so. There are no other book, and these two publications are not popular guide. This is meant for the scientists or the taxonomists. So there is no attempt to popularize the land snail, their importance, why one should study, why one should conserve, all those things. There was no attempt. And also, they are not active during this most of the year. Only they are active during the monsoon period. Or freshwater mollusks only in the water, and they are drab colored. So it didn't catch attention of the scientists or the lay public. Hence, there is a lot of bias toward the charismatic animals compared to these kind of lesser known or so-called drab-colored animals. So we need to get out of these charismatic species research and conservation to the other group, be it an insect, mollusk, or any other taxa, which are also important in the landscape, ecosystem, or for that matter, they contribute to the human well-being in many ways.
Until recently, it was thought that most of the land snails in Western Ghats were from Gondwana land. How has this understanding changed? What does this mean now to the research that's being done?
It was believed based on the faunal similarity between Africa, Madagascar, and India. So, however, with the latest understanding of this taxonomy using the molecular tools, it has been shown that majority of Indian land snail fauna, majority if not all, derived from Southeast Asia. They came into India after Indian landmass hit European or Chinese landmass around 50 million years. And after that, the faunal exchange took place. Some went out of India to Southeast Asia, and many came from Southeast Asia into India. And there are a few species which are actually Gondwanan, which is retained in the Western Ghats, but significant proportion of Indian fauna is not Gondwanan with the current understanding.
So all this was, this new knowledge came into being after development in DNA?
Yes, DNA-based tools. You know, we look at the genetic sequences from the species around the globe, you know, across these different continents, and trying to build the relationship and try to understand when did it evolve, what are the closest relatives, and so and so forth. It's all because of the molecular, thanks to the molecular tools and techniques developed in last 3 decades or so.
Land snails are also, they display a lot of endemism. What are the factors that are at play that cause so much endemism amongst land snails? And why are their distribution ranges often so small? Could you tell us a little more?
Yeah. For both these questions, there's only one important point. That is, they don't move fast. They don't disperse. Like, you know, at a snail pace, let's say, at age. Because it moves very, 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 very slow. Unlike birds or butterflies or mammals, there are studies which showed that, you know, in 2 years, a snail, which is marked, hardly moved a few meters, so surrounding its home range. Home range is very, very, very small. That's the reason they show very high levels of endemicity. And there are a lot of species also within the land snail, because of they occupy small micro habitat within the larger landscape. You know, some species might found under the logs. That is the microhabitat for that particular species, and some other at the base of large boulders, on the canopy or on the tree trunk, on the leaf, under the leaf, and so forth. They don't move much if you take 2 or 3 years. So that's the reason why they show very, very high levels of endemism, and so many species are there. Apart from this, there are climatic conditions also played a significant role in the diversification of land snail. Hence, there is so much of species richness.
Does this then lead to its own unique set of conservation challenges?
Absolutely. See, the traditional conservation approaches like protected areas may not work for this. Of course, if you conserve tiger, the whole landscape will be conserved. Or if you conserve elephant, whole landscape will be conserved. Snail, which is present there, also get conserved. There is no doubt about it. But there are many species which are narrowly distributed, which are outside protected area and not found there. That requires different type of conservation approaches. Traditional approach may not work, you know, either by creating awareness or creating smaller habitat within the urbanized landscape, and so and so forth. You know, one need to come up with a unique appropriate conservation programs for conserving these lesser known groups.
Speaking of conservation of land snails, what are some of the ecosystem services that we get from them? Why is it important that we save them?
Yeah. So first and foremost, they are food for human beings. You know, there's a communities in northern Western Ghats called CKP communities. They feed on particular species of land snail. In Northeast India, also communities they feed on land snail. They contain very rich in protein and the calcium. So it's a very cheap source of protein compared to the traditional meat source. And also it's abundantly available in the landscape. So that is one, the food for human. There are also food for the other animals, maybe the reptiles, rodents, birds. You know, the reptiles and birds require calcium to make eggs. So they get calcium from feeding on the snails. There are studies from Europe where they showed if they are in the landscape, the land snail density goes down, then the nesting success of the great-tit bird has also gone down. They attribute this to the limited calcium availability in the landscape. So that is second. The third, land snails are also soil engineers. What if soil engineers means, you know, they help in nutrient recycling, just like earthworm. You know, the land snail feed on dead end decaying organic matter, be it a log or dried leaf, rotting branches, and also scavenge on the dead small animals like, you know, snails, frogs, and others. Then release back the nutrient into the soil, which is available for plants to take it up. So they also play a very important role in the nutrient recycling. And also they are also used as a collector's item. You know, when you go to the beach, you collect snail shell. You know, everybody has done that. There are shell collectors. They do collect land snails, and you know, that's as like a collector's item. So apart from this, there are other medical importance also. Some of the land snails are used as a medicine in Southeast Asia, probably Northeast India also, but not much is known from the Western Ghats. So there are many such ecosystem services they provide, and they also provide these services in terms of they are the pest for the agricultural and horticultural crops. Mm-hmm. And some of these snails also are the carrier for diseases in humans, like eosinophilic meningitis. In African giant snail, what we see around, the carrier for the disease called eosinophilic meningitis. It is not reported from India, but from other parts of India, there might be the reports, but we need to do more work to understand, you know, what's the prevalence of this eosinophilic meningitis in Indian snails, especially the introduced ones, and in the human populations. That needs to be studied. Yeah, they are also the, you know, some of the native species are also pest on the agricultural and horticultural crop, especially the green vegetables like spinach, amaranth, and other fleshy green vegetables.
Okay. So one of the first services that you mentioned was consumption as food for humans. One often just thinks of France when you think of snail consumption, right? How rampant is this? Is there any research being done as to look at snails as an alternative source of protein?
There are a lot of work from other parts of the world. In New Zealand, in a very small plot, maybe 60-40 site or 60-100 plot, they are growing the snails in the enclosure and selling it, selling their eggs or the soft part as a food. In Europe, it's a very, very prized food item, and also in Southeast Asia. In India, it is not that that popular at all. Freshwater mollusks have been consumed in a very large quantity in Southeast, the Northeast India and Southern India and in the coastal belt, but not land snail. There are a lot of potential to make this as a very popular or exotic food in India. So you need to develop the rearing technique, understand the which species has got highest protein, carbohydrate or nutritional content, and we can try to breed them in the enclosure. And also because they feed on the what is that, vegetable matter, it's easy for us to grow them. Like waste from the vegetable market can be used as a food source for this. We don't have to have any special food source for these snails. So in terms of carbon footprint also very, very less. And also if you want to make it as exotic food, the returns is also very, very high. So there is high potential. One need to take it up. Yeah.
So what makes land snails so susceptible to climate and ecological change?
So, as I mentioned earlier, land snails doesn't move fast, okay? And they are highly sensitive to the temperature and the humidity or the moisture in the soil. Any change in the temperature regime, either increase or decrease, or decrease in the rainfall will certainly affect its population by in the form of desiccation. They need moisture, a lot of moisture, and they are active only during the monsoon. So if there is no rains, the moisture content is very low, they are highly susceptible for desiccation, and they can't survive with certain beyond certain temperature and low moisture. That's why they are very, very susceptible for any change in the temperature or precipitation regime.
I want to understand how big of a problem, how do snails affect agriculture? I know that pesticides are one of the threats to snails, but how much of a threat are snails to agriculture?
Yeah. There are a lot of studies from other parts of the world, like Australia, US or Europe. So there are reports from Australia, if they see one slug in one lorry full of spinach, they'll just discard entire batch of that the agricultural produce. So that's so much of loss in the economy. Not only the farmers, but also the whoever buys it and sell it. And coming to the Indian context, not much study what is the economic loss per se, but African giant snail, which is an introduced snail from Africa. So they are known to feed more than 500 species of native as well as the agricultural and horticultural crop. So they feed on fleshy parts of the agricultural crop, like it would be a bud, flower, or a young leaf, or a young fruit, fleshy part of the stem, and reducing the productivity. So this is more of a problem for the small land holding farmer, because they'll have a couple of hectares of land. Even if it's a 10% loss, that's a huge economic loss for the farmer. There are many such studies from various agricultural universities in India, but exact quantification of economic loss need to be ascertained, exact loss. So And also, you don't want to see a slug or a snail feeding on your dahlia or a exotic rose plant or a succulent in your garden. You might have paid thousands of rupees and bought it, right? You don't want, you might be a nature lover, but still you don't want your prized plant to be eaten away by this introduced snails and slugs, right?
True.
Yeah.
So how bad is the problem of invasives? You mentioned the African giant snail. Do we have a lot of invasives in India, and how do they affect the native landscapes?
Yeah. So there are something like 21 species of introduced mollusk in India, out of which 8 species are terrestrial snails, snails and slugs both. Out of these, there are 3 or 4 are the major pest. One is obviously the African giant snail. Because of the big size, it can grow up to 15 centimeters. So such a huge animal, imagine how much it might eat your agricultural or horticultural plants or the native. And apart from the agricultural loss, they are also nuisance, public nuisance, because they crawl into your kitchen or a bathroom and leave out that slime. And there are reports from Mysore that, you know, there are a couple of accidents because of the snail, because when they are crawling on the road, especially two-wheelers went above the snail and they skid and fell down. Yeah, these are the some of the human impact on the humans. Plus, they are also carrier for eosinophilic meningitis nematode, what I told earlier. And there are the recent introduction, like Labicolis heraldi. It's supposed to be an endangered species in South Africa, but it is spreading in India. They came along with the agricultural import from South Africa somewhere during early 2000s, when India started importing a lot of agricultural produce from South Africa. And this particular species are known to feed on mulberry plants. You know, mulberries are the food, mulberry plants are food resources for silkworms, right? So if these slugs started feeding on that, then there is a less productivity in the mulberry plants and less resources available for silkworm production. So there are these kind of effects, not only to the agriculture, but also to the horticulture and the other and the human well-being also. Yeah, but as I told, you know, no serious studies been conducted from Indian region. You know, when we are reviewing some literature for IPBES report, one of the major lacunae what we found was, what's its impact on the native ecosystem, the native biodiversity, be it a native land snail species or other soil micro and macro invertebrates. Those kind of information we don't know. What kind of, in America they might have studied, the kind of species what they found in America is different from what we see in India. The response is also different, right? These studies has to be done at this site space. You know, North India might be having a different site type of snail community and the soil organism. South India or West India or Eastern part of India have a different type of snail communities, right? Their responses will be different. So those studies needs to be done to understand what's the impact, what's economic loss, what's its impact on the human health, and so on and so forth. And coming to the how it affects the native species, mainly what we know here in India is because of the competition. They may not feed directly on the predate on the native species, but it compete, like, you know, species like this being such a huge animal, and many of the Indian snails are very small, couple of centimeter or 3-4 centimeters. This is a voracious feeder. So it feeds on anything and everything. So thus reducing the resource availability of the for the native snails, right? So thus affecting the native species composition.
How were these snails often introduced to India or different regions of the world? Is it usually agricultural products being shipped, or is it any other way?
This African giant swan is introduced as a pet. It's a very interesting story. In 1847, William Benson, he's one of the pioneers of Indian malacology. Mm-hmm. When he returned from Maldives, he got two individuals of this and kept it in his house for an year or for some time. When he left India in 1847, he gave these two individuals to his neighbor. His neighbor, what he did was, he released these two individuals in his garden in Chaurangi in Calcutta. These two individuals have spread to many parts of India after that. And there are reports that, you know, the farmer from Bihar, farmer from Arakku in Andhra, and farmer from Orissa, they saw this huge snail in Calcutta and wanted to keep it as a pet, and they got it into their home in Orissa, Andhra, and it humans also responsible for spread of this African giant snail. Okay, that is one. It's an intentional introduction. The second is the accidental introduction, mainly through the agricultural import, because most of these terrestrial snails come through agricultural product. You know, Lavicolis heraldi, as I mentioned earlier, and there are a very small snail called as Elopius gracile or Deroceras leve. These are all small snails and slug, mainly came to India along with the agricultural import. See, before 2003, there was no quarantine law in India. So after that, they introduced strict quarantine law. So these things has to be even more strengthened. So whatever the agriculture produce comes to India has to be screened. Make sure that there are no exotic animals in that agricultural import. In that way, we can control. Otherwise, once it reaches, then it is very difficult to control. You know, millions and millions of dollars have been put in place in other parts of the world to control, with limited success, right? So we need to be extra careful while introducing any species, including snails, whether it's for pet or through agricultural import. Yeah.
So as I was reading for this podcast, I realized that there are so many species of arboreal snails. How different are arboreal snails from land snails? Could you walk us through them a little bit?
The arboreal snails are also land snails, basically. But just they were found in the shrubs, sub-canopy or canopy. In terms of morphologically, they are not different from the other land snails which are found in the soil or on the herbaceous vegetation on the ground. Only one of the important thing about arboreal snails are they are actually colorful. Like, you know, there's a genus called as Amphidromus in Southeast Asia and also found in some parts of Northeast India. They are very colorful, bright white or green with bands and those kind of colors. Generally, arboreal snails are slightly, you know, bright colored compared to those snails which are found in the soil. Yeah, other one than that, there is no difference here.
So that's the only adaptation that they have that's different?
Yes, yes. I don't know what kind of, why that's bright colored. It is adaptation. If it's a green color, they can be, you know, camouflaged in the canopy or under the leaf. But some of them are brightly colored, like in brown band and white. So probably they are also acting as a predator avoidance behavior. So maybe, because, yeah.
How difficult is it to study these tree snails? access to them itself must be
very difficult.
Could you tell us what are some of the challenges?
Yeah, there are two challenges here. One is, and as I told you, they are found only during rainy season. You have to climb the trees, you know, sub canopy or on the shrubs, it's fine. Those who are found in the bark, we can sample very easily. But those who are found in the higher up in the canopy, which is 15, 20, 30 meters high, climbing those trees during monsoon is very, very difficult. You know, in Western Ghats or Eastern Himalayas, the rainfall is something like 3 to 4,000 or 5,000 millimeter or even more in certain part. Climbing the trees in the heavy rains, plus it will be slippery, a lot of algal and growth on it. So climbing is difficult. And sampling, sitting in the canopy is even more difficult because of the heavy wind. You need to have a proper gear, safety gears. If you want to sample snails in the canopy, the safety wise, it is really, really challenging. Yeah.
What are some of the conservation strategies that you would recommend as one of India's leading malacologists?
So first, you know, we need to study. The research is the first, you know, unless we know, we cannot recommend any conservation strategies. So there are only a handful of land snail researchers in India, 5 or 6. So that is not enough given 1,300 species, close to 1,300 species in India. So first thing for any conservation action, you need to know what species are there, how they are distributed, what is reproductive ecology, the natural history, and the taxonomy also. We need to study that. The second thing is to create an awareness. A lot of people think that it's a slimy creature, drab creature, so it is in yuck. You know, those kind of expression, if you ask a common man, he'll tell all these things. So one has to come out of that, try to understand what are the importance of these land snails. So then create awareness and try to, make people aware, plus the forest department and the others, that the importance of this snail. So awareness is the second. The third aspect, is the breeding, ex situ breeding, like in the zoo, and releasing them into the wild. There are examples like, Partula snails and few snails from Canary Islands been bred in London Zoo or in Chester Zoo in UK. The Partula snails are very interesting because they are found in Hawaiian Islands. So the African giant snail again have been introduced to the Hawaiian Islands, and they started competing with the native Partula snails. So the population started declining. So in order to control African giant snail, scientists decided to introduce these carnivorous snails from Africa, which used to keep African giant snail under control in its native range. So they introduced into Hawaii. So initially they were feeding on the African giant snail. Sooner or later, the rosy wolf snail, which is a carnivorous snail, started feeding on the native snails. So what happened was, because of this, some 20 species of Partula snail pushed to extinction. So this particular group of snails are found only in Hawaiian Islands, nowhere else. And there are now conservation efforts of breeding them in the zoo and releasing it back to the natural habitat. So similar kind of efforts can be or should be done for Indian snail, provided we have information on what are those species. We have to prioritize, right? You can't breed all the thing. We need to know which species is rare, which species threatened with the extinction because of other snail, land use and land cover changes, or any other kind of human-driven activities. That is third. Other activities could be, you know, encouraging the land snails to thrive in the urban or semi-urban areas by creating the habitat. You know, we can create a habitat. It's a small habitat where they can thrive within the urban landscape. So these are some of the conservation recommendation I suggest.
Thank you so much, Arvind, for walking us through the cryptic world of land snails. I hope to create more episodes with you about different aspects of mollusks. I know we've only barely scratched the surface of mollusk world today. So stay tuned to the HE podcast, and thank you once again, Arvind.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to speaking to you, Namrata. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned to our channel for more insights into the environment and the problems we face globally. Do subscribe to our channel to stay connected.